Today, we are pleased to have three of our longtime members share with us their experiences with transformation, our theme this month. I welcome Jamie Wolf first, Steve Caden, and then Dorothy Pitkin to our pulpit today to share what transformation means to me. Jamie?
Thank you. I'm Jamie Wolf, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers. I'm pretty sure I was invited here to speak today because I'm a transgender woman, and the organizers thought I'd have some deep insight into transformation. I know a little about transformation, but maybe not exactly in the way they expected. When trans people talk about changing from one gender to another, or to no gender at all, or something in between, we almost always talk about transitioning, not transforming. The first day I walked into this church presenting as a woman rather than a man, I hadn't transformed. I was exactly the same person I was the previous Sunday. I was just dressed differently. Maybe some of you perceived me differently, but I was still just me. So transformation can mean many things depending on the context. But at its core, it means changing one thing into something else. Some extreme examples might be the alchemists who worked for hundreds of years trying to convert lead into gold. Or the Bible stories about Jesus supposedly transforming water into wine. Or even more challenging, his transforming from a dead person to a living person. Or my tribute to Easter this year. But in general conversation, the definition is much looser. Think about real estate. If you're planning on selling your 70-year-old home, the realtor might suggest making some cosmetic changes to increase its curb appeal. Maybe paint the exterior and upgrade the landscaping. It'll look better, and I'm sure the realtor will gush about how you've transformed this old house into something new and much better. But as Rod likes to say in moments like this, transformed? Really? It's simply been painted and cleaned up. Still has an aging kitchen. Living room's awkward, roots are clogging the sewer line, and the old single-pane windows need to be replaced. Same old house, just a new and shiny exterior. Transition, on the other hand, implies another step in a logical progression. Kids can transition from elementary school to middle school. The news media talks about how we're slowly transitioning from gas-powered to electric vehicles. And science teaches us how water can transition between solid, liquid, and gas, all while still being just water. The doxology today talked about butterflies transforming from their larval or caterpillar stage. But is it really a transformation or just part of it? The normal transition of these as these insects mature. A beautiful monarch butterfly looks very different from its caterpillar with its black, yellow, and white bands. But it is exactly the same as before its transition or transformation. I don't know. I think that's the reason trans people don't talk about transformation. We've just transitioned from one uncomfortable exterior to one that better matches our gender identity. But that doesn't mean I haven't transformed. My transformation took place over years as I came to grips with who I am and then found the strength to overcome my internalized transphobia and fear that family and friends would shun me when they knew my truth. Only those closest to me saw this exhausting, difficult, and frequently painful work. I've told my story from this pulpit before, but I'll give a quick review for those who might have missed it. I was born in 1952, the third of four boys in a Mormon family in Salt Lake City, Utah. When I was about 6 years old, I realized I didn't feel like a male, whatever that means. And I longed to dress like my mother and hang out with girls. Things I knew were absolutely prohibited. I had no way to understand these persistent feelings, so concluded there must be something profoundly wrong with me. I needed to do everything in my power to hide, and I did it very well. But it was about 20 to 30 years ago, I started a glacially slow process of transforming myself from that terrified person, hiding my true identity, into someone who could embrace being transgender. In the process, I also learned to love myself, flaws and all. Most of my transformation was completed long before I changed my gender. My transition was important enough that I celebrate its anniversary each year on September 20th. But it was not nearly as important as the long and challenging transformation that finally made it all possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie. Good morning. I'm Steve Caden. So I'm 7 years old. I'm a shy, inward boy, an invisible middle child with a very rich internal world that's bottled up inside of me, yearning to be shared. My older brother and I are walking down to the Venetian Theater in Racine, Wisconsin, one of the two theaters in town down on Main Street. We sit down in the front row in excited anticipation. The room darkens, the curtains part, the music starts, and then up on the big screen, there appears colors, patterns, dancing mushrooms, flying fairies, dinosaurs, swimming fish, scary monsters, soaring horses, and Mickey Mouse as a sorcerer's apprentice. All set to the most stunning, sublime, touching, powerful music that I'd ever heard in my young life. Of course, this was the movie Fantasia. And it was a mind-blowing lightning bolt to my seven-year-old brain. While I was watching and listening, I experienced a sense of awe, wonderment, and passion. In moments transporting me to places of pure ecstasy, other times to soothing comfort. I felt like those characters up on the screen, dancing, soaring, floating. It was an astonishing revelation to my seven-year-old self that there actually were others out there that had the same kinds of internal experiences that I was having, and they figured out how to manifest it out into the world. I saw for the first time an avenue for connecting these rich, powerful, sacred bouquets of feelings and experiences with the outside world by expressing them through the magic of the music that was within me. I left the theater in a daze. The seed was planted. So we had a little old acrosonic spinet piano in our living room. And after this transformational experience I had at the theater, I started to experiment with what sounds I could make on it. My mother noticed my interest and signed me up for piano lessons. Great. So the piano teacher would play the songs for me. I'd listen very carefully and play them back by ear, pretending that I was reading the notes. Cheating, right? After a while, I knew that this really wasn't working for me, and it wasn't sustainable either. I mean, it felt too mechanical. I needed to feel the music. I wasn't feeling it. I wanted to be moved and inspired, and I could only do it by following what was calling to me inside. So I found an excuse to quit the lessons after about 6 months. So instead, I started picking up songs by ear on my own. Of course, there was a pretty large gap between the songs in my head and what actually came out on the piano. I mean, at first the songs were really simplistic. They were kind of like musical stick figures, like da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? But I kept plunking away, hour upon hour as a child, sitting in front of that piano, playing tunes over and over and over again in my attempts to translate those feelings inside out into the world. Now, oftentimes, the music sounded clunky. In rare instances, though, there were these magical, mystical moments when I experienced the flow, moments when I felt that I was like a conduit, that the music flowed through my fingers onto the keys of the piano. It was as if I was a spectator listening to the music flowing from some divine place that I marveled at and was awed by. I mean, these moments would inspire me to keep plugging away over hours, weeks, years, decades, a lifetime, my aspiring to match the music in my head and heart with what I'm able to play has translated into, I believe, the best of who I am and what I have to offer as a human being on the planet. So here I am, 68 years later. I occasionally have the privilege of being able to play for you on this beautiful grand piano. By the way, it's a big step up from that little spinet that I first started out on. So I'm still playing by ear. I'm still trying to musically transmit that sense of wonderment and awe and passion that I first felt as that seven-year-old watching Fantasia. For me, I can communicate the sacred that flows through me through music so much more fully than I can through words. So when I play for you, I try to have the music come through my head and heart to you so that you too might feel those feelings as well. If and when that may occur, then it makes me feel connected to you and hopefully deepens your connections with others who are experiencing this as well. My hope when I play for you is that I may have some part in touching inside, in touching something inside of you, so that you too may possibly have the kind of inspirational transformation that I had as that boy in the movie theater. Thank you.
So my name's Dorothy, and I'm a very different transformer. I tried to time this down so that I could just talk about the things that I really want you to know about me. I'm, like many people, I've been through a handful of colleges, many people my generation, I should say. I spent a year and a half, four-year colleges, and went to a couple of community colleges and a trade school. And in the end, I finally got my bachelor's degree, which is what my parents raised me to do, but it took a while. 10 years after I got my bachelor's degree, I got my master's degree in social work, and I had, in the period of time that I was in the School of Social Work, gotten involved in what we called the Solidarity Coalition for Economic Justice, when I was working with people whose industries had closed out, leaving them unemployed, underemployed. And we had the support. I was one of three people running the coalition. One was a church minister, and the other was a man representing the unions, but I was the only union member actually there. And we put together programs so that we had legal support for people, farm workers in particular, that weren't receiving unemployment. We had people, we had a food bank, we had people that would help with minor home repairs who were retired union members. We helped people that had been locked out. We helped whoever we could, however we could. And eventually our work led to some legislative work in Washington State that created a permanent worker center, created a trade union school so that people could learn how to be trade union advocates and bring more people into the trade. What happened that was transformative for me was that I had decided I didn't want to be just an ordinary social worker, not that there are any, but I didn't want one of those jobs that was pre-cut for social work. So I was, you know, doing my volunteer work. I was doing research. I was doing different kinds of things, again, mostly working with underemployed and unemployed people. And getting involved with the state and the people that were being dislocated from logging and fishing and other industries that were major parts of Washington State. I had been to a four-day workshop that I had thought was about psychology, but what it actually was about client-centered transformative experiential work, which is part of all therapy. It's part of how we live and change in our lives. The day after that ended, I received a call that was accompanied by a buzzing in my chest. It was something I have never experienced in any other circumstance. I felt the buzz and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was a call from a social work instructor, a professor from the school, who said, "I heard about this job in southwestern Washington, and I thought of you." I hadn't been in touch with this woman for a couple of years, but I knew it was my job. Turns out she didn't even know what the job was she was referring me to, and the people that interviewed me for the job didn't know either. It was my job. So when they gave me my job, I was able to shape it my own way, and my job was to write a curriculum for the people that were being downsized from mills that were going, had been loggers their whole lives, who had been fishermen their whole lives, because they had no life left to stay in the communities where they were often the second and third generation who had lived there in the woods. You don't move to the city when you live in the woods. So my job was to help them think through what the future needed to become for them individually. And I created a curriculum that was aimed at people with an average fourth grade education, people who had bad backs because of the logging or the fishing that they were doing, people who couldn't stand being in a school. So all of those pieces I put together with the story of the economy locally, with the story of everything I could think of that would help. And the class, the curriculum was finished on time, and the people that had hired me decided to do a six-week example of how this would work. I wasn't allowed to observe or be part of it, but I am one of the people that was in the board that hired me, who was part of the community development agency in the state, were able to attend lunch the last day of class. And he asked them, the students that were sitting at the table, "So how was it? What has happened for you?" And each and every person at the table said, "I've changed my life. I'm now in this profession. My wife is going to work. I'm going back to school. I'm moving to a different place." And I sat there listening, and I thought, number one, that's exactly what I designed it to do, which is kind of scary. And number two, it was like, what's going to happen to my karma now that I've done this, had this impact? What I learned then, which was really important to me, was the joy of transformation, the joy of facilitating it, and the joy of receiving it. And being part of that was like the best thing ever. What I want to share now, I can only do briefly because that's most of the time I had to share. I'm now part of an organization called ULab that comes out of MIT. It's a program I've been part of for 3 years now, and I'm one of 1,000 people currently working on projects that are supported by the staff of ULab. It's a free program, and it's based on transformation. It's based on making the future different than the past and looking forward and using experiential skills, you know, so that we can, through listening and making the world safe for the people we're listening to, help them escape those things that we've all been brought up with that limit our ability to speak for ourselves. Because there's this piece of what we think we are that keeps us from reaching for something that may be possible if we can let go of what that came from. It might be something that started very, very young. And it might be more recent. It can be related to all kinds of things. But I just wanted to let you know I do have some paperwork with me. If anyone's curious, I'm more than happy to get emails and send you information so that you can explore it yourselves. But I just wanted you to know that I do know the joy of transformation, because what I gained in those years back, I still get from this program now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. It was enlightening in so many ways.